Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Joint pain, stiffness, swelling, those are some of the symptoms that people can have with either rheumatoid arthritis or lupus. And we're going to take a look at how each autoimmune disease really affects the body as we talk with our guest today about rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, what they have in common, treatments that can improve a person's quality of life. Our guest, Dr. Manpreet Sethi, is a board-certified rheumatologist. She works on the clinic, or at the clinic, Orthopedic Sports and Medicine Specialists, and it's located in Neenah, Wisconsin. So as we talk with Dr. Sethi, I hope you'll join in. Do you have lupus or rheumatoid arthritis? How does it affect your daily life? Join the conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Manpreet Sethi, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
No, thank you, Mr. Miller. I'm excited to be here. This is the first time I'm doing something like this.
Well, I tell you what, we're looking forward to talking with you. So let's get started and let's talk about rheumatoid arthritis first. And let's be just the basics of it to begin with. What is it? And, explain what it is. Sometimes we call it RA, I guess, to shorten it up, but rheumatoid arthritis.
No, you're absolutely correct. So rheumatoid arthritis is probably the most common chronic arthritic condition that can be destructive to people. The prevalence is as high as 1% of population. That says quite a lot because that should be 1,000 per 100,000 of people. It's an autoimmune condition where our own immune system, genetics, play a role in conjunction with the environment or personal risk factors. But the most common manifestation of this would be joint swelling, stiffness, and pain, primarily in the hands and feet. It does affect women more than men. And every patient, however, just like with every disease, is different in how they are going to present.
So what do we know about what causes it?
The general consensus for almost all autoimmune diseases is there is almost always a genetic predisposition. So for rheumatoid arthritis specifically, more than 100 genes have been identified that have been found to be more prevalent in the patients who have rheumatoid arthritis. But even in the identical twins, the possibility of having rheumatoid arthritis is really just 15%. So we know that genetics is not all. Environment plays a role. And again, the general consensus is that there is a second hit. And that second hit could come from some infections, some trauma. Again, it probably varies from patient to patient, and much research has actually been done in that area to identify a particular trigger. We don't have an absolute answer, but what we have found is that things like cigarette smoking, for example, would increase that chance in a person who was already predisposed to having rheumatoid arthritis to end up having the manifestation.
Mm. Well, let's switch to lupus for a minute. This is similar, as I understand it, to rheumatoid arthritis. What are the different types of lupus that a person might have?
So from my perspective, although, the population that gets affected with lupus and rheumatoid is same. So from a bird's eye view, they may appear similar because both of them can have joint pain and stiffness. But when we look into the deeper details, they do behave differently than each other. With the lupus, the more worrisome form of lupus would be systemic lupus, where it affects different organs and could be more scary. And then there would be other people who have skin rash from lupus, and that is also cutaneous lupus. But fortunately, many times that does not affect the rest of the organ systems.
And so with the organ system, so does it mean that your stomach might ache? Or I'm trying to just figure out.
Thank you for, you know, asking me to clarify. So with lupus, the general perception is that it is a rash that happens from the sun, which is what the skin lupus would be. But in somebody, when I say systemic lupus or organ, they may be the people who have sores in the mouth or just hair, but they may also be the people who have fluid around their heart or lungs, which we call pleurisy, pericarditis, that can be as severe as the heart stopping because the fluid was that much, or having perforation of the bowel in the gut, or having kidney failure because of the inflammation in the kidney. So lupus could involve, unfortunately, different systems of our body other than just the skin and joints.
You know, Barbara in Madison has something that relates to lupus. So let's go to her now. Barbara, thank you for calling.
Hi, I want to bring 2 points up. My late husband was diagnosed with systemic lupus at age 34. He died at age 54 after having received 2 kidney transplants.
I'm sorry.
He did have some pulmonary involvement, some cardiac, but mostly it was kidney and joints. And a couple things I'd like to mention. One is his grandfather died at a very young age of what they called at the time Bright's disease, which is also kidney failure. And he had a lot of arthritis, but he was never diagnosed. So I'd like to question whether it's more common now or whether it's just being diagnosed properly, because it took 6 months to diagnose my husband. He was in the military, and they don't see it as much in men. And I think it's just part of it is better diagnosis.
Barbara, thank you for calling. Dr. Sethi, what do you think?
So I would agree that the diagnosis is better now because the labs have changed over the years. And even though the labs are not as good as we would like them to be, we certainly have better information today than we had years ago. And when it comes to men, although men are less likely to get lupus, unfortunately, many studies show that when they get it, they are more likely to have a severe disease. And unfortunately, also higher mortality compared to women.
Barbara, did that help out, Barbara?
Yes, I think it did kind of clarify a few things. I didn't realize that in men it was more severe as a rule. It certainly was in my husband, although he worked up until the end of his life.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss, Barbara. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you'd like, you could email us. The email address, ideas@WPR.org. ideas@WPR.org. Dawn in Spring Green, we'll go to you now. Hi, Dawn.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having this subject because I'm extremely interested as the result of my very recent diagnosis in December with what they're referring to as late stage lupus, because at the age of 68, this is the first time in my life I've ever had to deal with this. And my symptoms included severe chilblains of both my hands and my feet and anemia. And so I'm kind of wondering what my outlook for the future is going to be. I mean, if you're diagnosed late in life as opposed to those who are normally diagnosed very early in life.
Well, Don, thank you so much for calling. Dr. Sethi, a comment?
So, John, unfortunately, I think that every patient with lupus is different. So not having all the information on your case, it's hard for me to say what the prognosis or what would you expect in future. Yes, you are right. Majority of the women who get diagnosed with lupus are in the childbearing age. But as people have been living longer, we are seeing more incidents of what we call late onset lupus or late onset rheumatoid arthritis as well. How people will do in future depends a lot on how they are doing in general, if they have any other associated conditions, how your lab work looks like initially, which I don't have access to.
What about, somebody like Dawn or others that may be in her circumstance? What kinds of things, approaches can physicians take to help ease the pain or eliminate the pain? Are there diet issues? Are there medical issues that could be taken?
So, yes, we have advanced more in the treatment, and the treatment is, however, customized to each patient, because especially with lupus, and as I'm sure Dawn would agree, every patient is different. Dawn did not present with a classic manifestation like a 20, 30-year-old woman with skin rash. Depending upon how they are doing is what is decided, what can be done for them. Now, the first thing, in my opinion, would also be, yes, we have medications and we will decide medications depending upon how the patient is doing and if they had any heart condition or anything else. But non-medically, what can we do? So in general, for lupus, the idea would be sun protection, because the UV light has been shown to cause flare-ups of lupus. So using sunscreen with SPF of more than 55, protection from UVA and UVB would be the first thing that I would tell all my lupus patients to do to prevent the flare from happening, which would also include like wearing long sleeves and hat. So sun protection is the key. Now in Dawn's case, she also had chilblains. So if somebody had like Raynaud's or problems with circulation, the idea would be to keep core body warm. But that's again going back to specific manifestation and what to do rather than a general rule. In general, I also tell patients to avoid certain medications if possible, especially the medications that increase sun sensitivity in general. So some of the antibiotics like Bactrim or sulfa antibiotics in general would cause more sun sensitivity, even in patients who didn't have an underlying autoimmune disease. So that would be something that I would say, please avoid. Keep in mind that may exacerbate something. Then the idea would be lifestyle. So diet and exercise would play a role, because somebody is already fighting with an autoimmune condition, an inflammatory condition, on a day-to-day basis that is challenging them. So having a healthy diet, something like a Mediterranean diet, would be better to protect the heart and other organ systems. And a regular exercise to keep the body going, because we need that energy. And although it's hard at times to do that, it would be good to take overall control of health.
So some advice there for you, Dawn. I appreciate very much your call, and wish you good luck and with your treatment. Appreciate it very much. Thank you. Talking today about rheumatoid arthritis and lupus with our guest, Dr. Manpreet Sethi, a board-certified rheumatologist, works at the clinic Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Specialists, OSMS, located in Neenah, Wisconsin. Trina LaSousa is our engineer today. Courtney Everett, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at rheumatoid arthritis and lupus and their treatments today on the show with our guest, Dr. Manpreet Sethi of Orthopedics and Sports Medicine Specialist, located in Neenah, Wisconsin. Questions for Dr. Sethi? I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Chris from Adams, Wisconsin, wanted you to talk a bit more about a diet with lupus. What should that look like, perhaps in a bit more detail? Chris happens to have fibromyalgia and lupus, and wonders, you know, what difference a special diet can make. You mentioned the Mediterranean diet.
So there has been actually a lot of interest in the scientific community to see if the gut health and how the gut health would be related to different autoimmune diseases in general. When it comes to the literature, however, we have not found one specific diet that is going to fix the issue or modify the issue. Part of that problem also is that, again, every patient is different. So the general bacteria, or what we call flora, meaning the amount of one bacteria versus the other bacteria in the gut, is different from patient to patient. And that imbalance or balance sometimes may modify the other things that may be going on, especially on the autoimmune front. When it comes to lupus specifically, again, no specific diet has been proven to be of one benefit. The reason for Mediterranean diet is, again, to protect the overall health, because one of the common, unfortunately, one of the common reasons for a lupus patient to have a bad outcome would also be the heart or cardiovascular reason. So Mediterranean diet helps with that. That is also a more balanced diet approach, which would be somewhat less inflammatory. And there have been studies that show that this kind of diet helps reduce the intensity and severity of the symptoms. It also depends on what stage the patient is at with lupus. So if I have lupus and I am going through a severe flare-up, the general tendency of the patient is to not feel well and not eat well when that was the right time. I needed more nutrition, more energy, probably also more carbs. On the other hand, if I was being treated with steroids, where I'm expecting that I may have weight gain, my diet would need to be modified. So probably I'm eating less carbs, less fatty food, so as not to get the side effects of the medication. The third thing would be if I have kidney involvement, for example, it would be important for me to reduce the salt in my diet at that particular time. And if I'm having too many steroids, the idea would be to reduce sugar. Unfortunately, I think in your case, when it's a combination of fibromyalgia and lupus, the gut health is even more important, because somebody with both of those may already be having some stomach symptoms that would need to be identified as if they have another manifestation or not.
And someone else, in an additional follow-up, someone else was wondering about, when we talk about gut health, can probiotics help a person's digestive system, maybe versus a specific diet or included with a specific diet?
So that's a very good question. And I, in fact, tried to take a look at it during my fellowship to see if probiotics work in general for people. In general, for gut health, probiotics seem to have a role. Many people feel better if they have diarrhea or other things. That's just in general. But when it comes to the probiotics, to make a statement that that would change the outcome of lupus or modify it would be wrong. We have not seen that proof. When it comes to what do we expect theoretically, I'm going to go back again to your flora is going to be different than mine. So I did actually look into it and previously tried to find if we can find out which probiotic works. And this is purely at a theoretical level. I have not done research on that at a larger level. But what I found was that people had different sets of bacteria, that I felt that not everybody's poop was the same. I could probably divide like people into three or four different kinds, which would mean that if I gave them the same diet or probiotic, I'm probably going to fail because they are not going to behave the same for me. So this is still an ongoing interest. There is an interest in this subject, but we haven't found the one specific trigger or food to avoid that would fix it all. And I believe the reason is everybody is different.
You know, let's go back to causes for lupus and relating to younger women. I wonder, you know, childbearing age, is lupus more likely to occur if a woman is pregnant or has had a child?
Yes, so we do see flare-ups of lupus in the postpartum or like immediately after giving birth as well. In some women, they would flare up during pregnancy, and we do worry about that. And general idea is that we want lupus to be as perfectly controlled before somebody tries to conceive because of that reason. Hormones do probably play a role in lupus in terms of its incidence as well as severity. And that is why we probably see it in more childbearing women age. Prolactin hormone, which is the one, you know, for lactation, that increases in that hormone can also sometimes increase the flare-ups of lupus. So there is a hormonal connection there.
I don't know if you can do this, but let's put a scale of 1 to 10 out there, and 10's the highest rate in terms of level of pain that people typically feel from each disease. If you were going to... What is a typical pain elevation level for lupus versus rheumatoid arthritis?
So this is a tough spot, okay? So I'm purely talking about an average patient, just because every patient is going to be different. And an average patient that I have seen in my clinic, because each patient of lupus is different. I'm going to say lupus, just for the pain alone, probably 4. Rheumatoid for the pain alone, probably 6 to 8. Fibromyalgia for the pain alone, probably more than 8.
Oh, that's high. And just back to pregnant moms for a minute. Can the pregnant mom pass the lupus on to the fetus?
So there is something that is called neonatal lupus. And if I have the antibody or, again, the predisposition in me for the lupus and I carry certain chemicals, I may be able to pass it through the placenta into the child. That can result in a rash that typically would just go away after a few months because it was just in the circulation coming from me. Unfortunately, with some specific chemical markers, the newborn may have heart block as well. And that is why we do screening, and depending upon how the patient is doing, we do have our patients with lupus see a high risk maternal-fetal medicine doctor who can help stratify the risk and monitor it. And again, depending upon that specific situation, we typically keep the patients on certain medications that can reduce that incidence.
Let's talk about diagnosis of these two. A rheumatologist can confirm, I guess, whether a person has lupus or rheumatoid arthritis. How is each disease diagnosed?
So let's first do that with the rheumatoid arthritis. And I personally believe that 70 to 80% of the diagnosis is already made when we hear the patient and examine the patient. So that is the most important piece to figure out whether or not that is a likelihood or possibility. And that would depend on the whole history as to how they feel on a day-to-day basis, which joints are involved, how bad are they involved, what makes them better, what makes them worse. That would be combined with what I see with my own eyes or feel with my hands on the joints. And once I feel that, yeah, this makes sense, I would do some labs to verify as to how correct or incorrect, you know, just to sure. Kind of verify suspicion. And knowing that the labs may fool me in the sense that 20 to 30% of the patients may not have the proper lab work for rheumatoid arthritis that we know of. Again, history and physical. If I already knew the diagnosis, we would still treat the patient with as having rheumatoid arthritis. So there is a certain set of criteria to help identify. There are specific labs which are different for rheumatoid arthritis compared to lupus patients. And then I will supplement my information with having some x-rays to see if there is any damage done or not. So yes, a rheumatologist can certainly help diagnose, identify, and then treat these diseases.
And I imagine diagnosis is better, or misdiagnosis of, let's say, lupus is better now than it probably was years back.
I would, I have only been practicing for like 5 years. So, but yes, from what I see and from what I know, I agree with you. I think that the diagnosis is much better where we are now compared to what I read in the books from 20 years from, you know, from before.
Talking with Dr. Manpreet Sethi today about rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, and you can join in too. Open lines get you on pretty quickly. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. And Jerry from Caledonia, Minnesota, wants to know, are there any new breakthroughs in treating rheumatoid arthritis?
So, yes, we do. We do have more medications for rheumatoid arthritis than what we had 5 years ago or than what we had 10 years ago. And as many may see on TV commercials, there are advertisements for newer medications every other year. So those things are happening. The understanding of the rheumatoid arthritis is also getting better. The results from the medications that are available now are also better than what they were 20 years ago. The medications are more effective. We are also moving in the direction of precision medicine. We are not there yet, but that is a strong subject that is being pursued, which would be that we hopefully be able to identify as to what makes every patient different with rheumatoid arthritis and how do we use that information to help decide which medication would work better. So there is a lot of new interest in that field and more information is coming in. I'm looking forward to that and hopefully we'll be there soon.
Yeah, that would be great if we could get it down to that level of each individual and then a treatment that is specific for that particular person based on that particular person's makeup and needs. It'd be wonderful. Well, again, you can join us at 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And Kathy in Green Lake is up with a question, I believe. Let's go there. Kathy, hi.
Hello. So I read some time ago that there was some current thinking that a family could have a genetic predisposition to autoimmune diseases in general, not necessarily just to a specific one. In my own family, we have rheumatoid, sarcoidosis, MS, and I'm wondering if that's consistent with current thinking now, that it could be that there's a family that just has a lot of autoimmune diseases. I have a lot of symptoms, but they've never found any particular one yet.
Okay.
So, Kathy, from what I'm understanding, your question is if there can be a cluster in families of autoimmune diseases, right?
Yes.
Yes. So we do see some cluster. And again, I'm going to go back to the genetics part of it. So we do, as we have identified more than 100 genes for rheumatoid, similar number in lupus, they do tend to cluster and we may pass it on to different people. You know, different generations of the family. There are some specific genes that may be more prevalent or more likely to be passed on compared to some of what we call recessive. So I may have a gene with only a 10% chance of, you know, sending it out to my offspring. On the other hand, there are some autoimmune diseases that are more dominant, meaning I have a 50% chance of giving it to my family member. So yes, depending upon, because you asked a general question, depending upon what that process is, there will be some clustering. We also see some autoimmune diseases kind of hanging together because the general process is the same. So inactivation of certain genes is the same. So we do see like more diabetes, thyroid, celiac kind of clustering together. And that is how we see some of our diseases as well.
Kathy, thank you. Danielle in Wisconsin, we'll go to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I really just kind of wanted to know, I got recently diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis. I have psoriasis really bad. I always say it wrong. But I kind of just wanted to know where that stands with what you're talking about and trying to understand what the next step would be. You know, I'm on a steroid for it, and they say be on that for a couple months, and I'm just kind of confused. I don't know if you could lighten that for me a little bit.
Sure. Thank you for calling, Danielle.
So, Danielle, psoriatic arthritis would be a different topic than what we are talking about. So what I said may not have necessarily applied to you. For example, that UV light that might have helped your psoriasis instead of that, you know, what I talked about, completely avoiding the UV light. Your disease is going to, if it is psoriatic arthritis, as you said, if I understood it correctly, it is likely to behave different than the rheumatoid arthritis and lupus. Again, specifics of as to how you are going to do and what you need to do is beyond what I can understand on a telephone call. But in general, for psoriatic arthritis, there is a variety of medications that is available. Some of them have lesser side effects now. In fact, I'm going to say we have made more advances in psoriatic arthritis treatment that, again, in general, can be really helpful. Every patient is going to be different. You should work closely with your doctor to find out what the next steps would be. And typically, if somebody is in a flare, I would give them steroids. But there is also a long-term plan that would be decided. Again, patient to patient, it's going to be different.
Danielle, thanks again. Appreciate it. Mike in Dodge County, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Yes, good morning. I was calling. My wife was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis several years ago and perhaps eczema also. And her doctor recommended she get all the sun that she can, like even like an hour a day without any sunscreen or anything. So I was just wondering if that was good advice maybe from that doctor or not.
I could not understand the question clearly. I'm sorry, Mr. Miller.
Mike's wife has rheumatoid arthritis, and his doctor or her doctor recommended sun, and at least an hour a day of sun. And Mike is wondering, is that correct or? What would you say to that?
So I think that the treatment decision is definitely with the doctor who is treating the patient, who is seeing the patient. So I would not, you know, like kind of say that that would be wrong. Also, in terms of rheumatoid arthritis, the sun exposure is not necessarily a thing that I worry about. So if I personally had, let's say, rheumatoid arthritis, and I had maybe a skin condition like vitiligo where I needed sun exposure for some time with my color, I would take it.
Would you use sunscreen?
Again, that would depend on what the doctor is trying to treat and do. And so, again, like if a dermatologist felt that that was needed and, you know, whatever amount of sunscreen was needed or not needed, depending upon what they are trying to treat, I would go with that. I mean, I'm sure that as a patient, they knew that the patient also has rheumatoid arthritis in case there was a concern. But just for arthritis alone, I probably wouldn't be as concerned. In general, you know, with sun exposure, especially with a certain ethnicity, we worry about cancer risk and other things. But that's something that the dermatologist should be keeping in mind already.
Mike, thanks. Let's go to Dennis in Milwaukee. Dennis, hello.
Good morning.
And what can we do for you?
Well, I just had a couple of curious questions about arthritis in general. And I noticed that all computer keyboards now that are designed are flat. And the other question I had was about texting, where everybody that texts only uses their thumbs. Now, would they? I'm just curious if they'd have a greater risk of arthritis in the hands by operating this way. And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
I haven't learned to use my thumbs for texting. I'm still using a finger, but, but as an aside, sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Sethi.
So from an autoimmune standpoint, one would not think that a keyboard use or the thumb use for the texting would trigger something that I never had genetic predisposition for. So again, from a rheumatology perspective, I wouldn't have said that there is more risk of RA or lupus. When it comes to the arthritis, I would worry more about other mechanical issues, for example, carpal tunnel, some tendon injuries for the thumb, some tendon pain that would be more common before the arthritis would set in. We are really not stressing the joints in terms of overloading the joints. But yes, if I had thumb arthritis already, which is very common, especially in women, I probably would be having more pain if I was using my thumbs in a certain position, because then I'm causing repetitive stress.
Linda called from Milwaukee. She wants to know if there are any studies that they're looking for participants as it relates to this. She's a longtime rheumatoid patient, diagnosed in 87. She participated in studies in the past and wondering if there, you know, anything going on in that area.
So studies have been ongoing, and they are currently ongoing for lupus as well as rheumatoid arthritis. As to which study would a patient be a candidate for, that depends on what medications they have tried and failed and what they are looking for new. So there are websites like clinicaltrials.gov, where there are a list of trials that are ongoing that somebody can look into. And if you were interested in having some difficulty, you could also talk to your rheumatologist who is treating you, who can guide you better depending upon your condition as to where you would need to be.
So clinicaltrials.gov would be a place, as well as talking with your own doctor who is treating you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this has been my most fascinating conversation, Dr. Sethi. I want to thank you so much. Maybe we can get you back. There are lots of callers online yet, and I'm sorry we can't get to everybody right now. But thank you again for being with us, and I hope we can do this again.
No, me too. Thank you. I love doing this and talking to my patients in general, so I will be here again.
All right. Dr. Manpreet Sethi, a board-certified rheumatologist, works at the clinic Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Specialists, OSMS, located in Neenah, Wisconsin. Well, we're going to stay with the medical side of things today on the show and take a look at another topic, and that has to do with diabetes and strengthening health equity on diabetic care with our next professor from UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.